Thanksgiving can open old wounds. Remember the time the family got tired of waiting for the perennially late brother?
Sorry, we're late.
Another minute and we would have cut the turkey without you and started to eat.
To cut the turkey without me present? We leave the house!
We didn't cut the turkey.
But still, those two brothers never speak again, a scene from Barry Levinson's semi-autobiographical 1990 film Avalon. Movies can mirror our meals. They can remind us other people are fighting over premature turkey carving. Steve Zajcik writes about film for the Los Angeles Times, and he's been thinking about the dramas and the laughs that can arise from a family gathering. We want to spend a few minutes on them in case you want to plan a rental along with your side dishes. And Steve joins us from the Argo Studios in New York. Nice to speak with you again.
Same here, Robin.
So just referring back to that scene from Avalon, probably any psychologist, even any filmgoer, will tell you it wasn't about cutting the turkey.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, the brilliance of Levinson's film is that we can take both in our family lives and, of course, in our film-going experiences, we can take these very small, seemingly sort of insignificant moments and blow them up into something bigger. And they're often a kind of almost a healthier way, I think, of processing things that are a lot tougher to process.
It always strikes me that with, you know, rare exceptions, nothing really is as powerful on screen or as painful on screen as it really is when you're in that moment with a family. And I'm wondering if that's because when it's once removed from our actual experience, we see the absurdity in things.
Yeah, a friend of mine had put it well. He said, you know, with any kind of dysfunctional family story, whether it's a film or a novel, there's a kind of, I wouldn't say schadenfreude, but there's a certain kind of pleasure we get in, A, knowing that other people deal with the same things that we deal with, but also, B, in the fact that they have to deal with it, at least for that moment when you're in the theater watching it, and you can kind of leave that all behind. So yeah. I think there is a sort of catharsis, and exactly what you said, too, that the sort of distance we can bring to it. I mean, there's a movie that's, in fact, out in theaters now that I think does this quite well and gives us that kind of release that you're talking about, and this film is called Silver Linings Playbook. David O. Russell directed this film with Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence and Robert De Niro and a whole cast of great actors, sort of all enacting this very kind of quirky, humorous, but ultimately, I think, dramatic story of a family in suburban Philadelphia that's trying to kind of find its way, and people are trying very sort of tenuously to connect with one another, and much as we all do this time of year.
Yeah. Well, this, again, Silver Linings Playbook stars, as you said, Bradley Cooper as Pat. This is a man who's bipolar, has some anger issues. He's been released from a mental hospital. We have a scene. He comes to live with his parents. And in this scene, he wakes them up in the middle of the night to tell them why he hates Ernest Hemingway's A Farewell to Arms.
The whole time you're rooting for this Hemingway guy to survive the war and to be with the woman that he loves, Catherine Barkley.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning, Pat.
And he does. He does. He survives the war after getting blown up. He survives it and he escapes to Switzerland with Catherine. You think he ends it there? No! She dies, Dad! I mean, the world's hard enough as it is, guys. Can't somebody say, hey, let's be positive? Let's have a good ending to the story?
Pat, you owe us an apology.
Mom, I can't apologize. I'm not going to apologize for this. You know what I will do? I will apologize on behalf of Ernest Hemingway, because that's who's to blame here.
Well, okay, and here's a perfect example, Steve, because I'm chuckling, and yet, you know, have a loved one who wrestles with bipolar illness, and it's often not funny. But again, there's something funny about seeing it once removed.
Exactly right. And that's, I think, the genius of this film is that it sort of puts into context the things we all deal with, whether we have someone in our lives who has psychological difficulties or we just have a general psychological difficulty because we're dealing with family members who may not see eye to eye with us. And I think that a really good film as this one is, what it sort of does is it kind of exaggerates those differences just enough that we can feel that remove, but keeps them close enough to our own or most of our own experiences that we can still find it relatable. And I think a good film will kind of take all these characters, sort of chain them to the table, dramatically speaking, and sort of let these things play out. Another movie, as you're talking, that comes to mind that does that quite effectively going back a little bit is Moonstruck, 1980 sort of Norman Jewison classic, Cher, Nicolas Cage, really great cast, and that has a couple of really great scenes that I think will resonate with any of us who've been in these intergenerational situations with our family, particularly around a dining room or a kitchen table, where there's tension and sometimes there seems to be no way out of it.
Yeah, I love this movie. Cher won an Oscar for her character Loretta She's in love with Ronnie, the younger brother of her fiancé, Johnny. This gets complicated. She lives with her family in Brooklyn. And then this scene, they're sitting around. Ronnie's already there, the one she's in love with, and they're awaiting her fiancé. Let's listen.
So what are we doing?
Waiting. Johnny Camerari.
My name's Ronnie.
Johnny's brother?
Oh, nice to meet you. Amita Capomaggi.
Raymond Capomaggi, Rose's brother.
Someone tell a joke.
The brilliance of that scene is that it kind of gets at both the tension and the way that in sort of the right situation, the right family member, in this case, the kind of grandfather, patriarch of the family, kind of comes in and says, somebody tell a joke, because otherwise you're either going to have a fight or you're going to laugh. And for most of us, we kind of take the latter route, but it doesn't always work out that way.
We want to keep going through the list of films that Steve Zajcik recommends. We'll have them at hereandnow.org, but they're to sort of mirror family gatherings like the ones we're about to embark on. And I know there's one you want to mention. It's about a father and son.
Absolutely. There's a movie called Footnote that came out maybe about a year ago. It's an Israeli film, and it's not kind of what you normally think of when you think about these sort of family gathering movies. This movie is about a father-son, kind of an older man and his grown son, who are both professors and kind of a similar kind of academic realm. And they have a very, shall we say, contentious relationship because they're doing the same thing. And I think that, you know, while there's no sort of moment where everybody sits around the table and has it out, there are all sorts of little ways that they kind of both try to one-up each other, poke at each other, take pride in accomplishments that they've had that the other hasn't had. And, you know, this is certainly not a feel-good Hollywood film by any stretch, but ultimately I think they get at what a lot of us sometimes feel, which is a sense of competitiveness or a sense even of resentment about family members. It's a lot better to watch two kind of slightly outsized characters duke it out on the screen than it is maybe to enact it in our own lives.
And this, by the way, is some music from the Footnote soundtrack. That's Steve Zajcik. We'll have his film suggestions at hereandnow.org and more with him in 1 minute. Here and Now. Welcome back to our conversation with Steve Zajcik of the Los Angeles Times. We're talking films about family gatherings. On our Facebook page, Rosamund Cummins suggests Postcards from the Edge. Here are some other suggestions. A Pieces of April. Katie Holmes, estranged from her family, decides to cook Thanksgiving dinner anyway. Hannah and her sisters, that starts and ends with Thanksgiving dinner. And Steve, you want to talk about the 1996 film Beautiful Girls. It stars Timothy Hutton as a jazz pianist who returns to his Massachusetts home. In this scene, he sees his dad again, and they have little to talk about.
Hello, Dad.
When'd you get in?
Just now. Mo picked me up.
Got a lot of bags. Staying long?
I don't know.
There's, golf on TV. Would you like to watch some golf?
Sure. Sure.
I think what's interesting about this movie is that, as that scene sort of illustrates, there's a lot of tension sometimes. There's a lot of silence. There are things people can't say to each other. What's interesting about the way that film plays out is that Timothy Hutton ends up, you know, really kind of bonding with a number of his friends. He had moved away. He now kind of goes back and reconnects. Matt Dillon plays one of the friends. There are a few other really kind of good character actors in it. And I think it sort of shows that even when family tension or family connections can be strained, sometimes they're sort of these surrogate families and with their own sets of dysfunction. But I think Beautiful Girls is sort of a good example. It's not ostensibly a movie about family gatherings, but I think it ultimately addresses a lot of those same issues.
Right. Well, family relationships of all kinds are explored in your next selection. This is 2007's Dan in Real Life, starring Steve Carell as Dan, a widower who, at a family get-together, meets and falls in love with his brother's girlfriend, sort of shades of Moonstruck. And he does this with all the family members around. Here's a scene where Dan's parents are trying to talk to him, but he's in the laundry room of the family cottage. People keep coming in and out. Let's listen.
Yeah.
Dan?
Mm.
Hi.
Hey.
Oh, honey, you know we're worried about you. You know that.
And with your behavior last night, this morning, we are now officially worried.
Well, thanks. I'm touched. But I'm fine.
We're having a private conversation.
Come on in. Sorry. No, come on in. This is good.
Privately, we'd like to talk to you.
Go ahead. I'm all ears.
Well, you know, you do so much for your girls, and you do so much for all of us. What are you doing for yourself?
No, not now. Sorry,
sorry. Come on in.
I just want you to think about
it.
It's fine.
Honey, we'd like to speak
Stay,
to you privately.
Stay, please. Go ahead, Mom.
Danny. Yes, honey.
Is this because Uncle Dan's acting so weird?
Yes, it is.
Yes,
there's never anywhere to talk.
Yeah, what I love about this film is that it is exactly that. It explores problems that I think we're all familiar with and that have been handled on screen before. Recently, a widowed man, a single dad, getting pressure from his parents, running into some issues with his brother as well. There's sort of a romantic kind of tension that exists there. But, it you know, to me, it shows that you can sort of tell these stories that we've all either lived through or been told many times and do it in a way that's really fresh and really human. Another example kind of along the same lines that I often think of when that movie comes up is a movie called Inner Shoes, which is Curtis Hanson about 6 years ago telling a story with Cameron Diaz as the protagonist and a contentious or difficult relationship she has with her sister, as well as an interesting and heartfelt relationship she has with her grandmother, Shirley MacLaine, and I think gets at some of the intergenerational sort of messiness in the way that that a lot of these films do.
Yeah, Toni Collette, the good older sister, Rose, Cameron Diaz, the wild younger sister, Maggie, and Shirley MacLaine, as you said, playing the grandmother they didn't know they had, but Cameron Diaz forges a relationship with.
Yeah, and we have a scene from that film where I think Cameron Diaz's character, Maggie, really is trying to connect with her grandmother and dealing with the fact that her own mother had died and trying to find some solace in what her grandmother has to say.
How come you don't have any pictures of my mom around? Don't you like thinking about her?
I don't need to have a picture to think about my daughter. You put out pictures? People ask questions. They expect you to tell them everything, and I don't do that.
Because Mom was sick?
Because she's gone.
Oh, and that sounds pretty powerful.
It is. It's funny. It's a movie that, you know, we've seen Cameron Diaz play a lot of comedic roles and, you know, Something About Mary and kind of go pretty broad. And this film sort of seems to, as it starts, seems to kind of tread over some pretty familiar territory, but it moves in some unexpected ways, and I think it ends up being surprisingly emotional for what at first can seem like a pretty mainstream kind of commercial picture.
Okay, but also maybe dark, you know, for young people. So we just want to, you know, say you also throw in 1954's Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, directed by Stanley Donen, set in 1850s Oregon. A lumberjack who brings home a bride and his six brothers decide they want to get one too. And it's also remembered for Michael Kidd's choreography. Picture them dancing during this barn-raising scene. Like this, why, Steve?
Well, I just thought, to me, it's interesting. We tend to think about family movies as tending to be pretty heavy, dealing with death, loss, fighting. Even the turkey can't be enjoyed in peace and solitude. So, to me, when you kind of go back to these sort of, you know, mid-century musical picture and the sort of hijinks that go along with it, it's just kind of a nice counterpoint. I think it also shows how much kind of our cinematic take on family has changed. I think when you look back at that period of time, whether it was on television with a Leave It to Beaver or Father Knows Best, where things always seemed to work out harmoniously, or even on the big screen where it maybe was treated, some of these family dynamics were treated a little more lightly. We've kind of evolved and gotten a little bit more sophisticated, perhaps a little darker, perhaps a little more self-loathing sometimes, but it's interesting to sort of track where the family gathering subgenre has really come in the last half century.
Steve Zajcik, who writes about film for the Los Angeles Times, will have a list of all the films he's mentioned at hereandnow.org. Steve, thank you, and happy Thanksgiving.
A happy Thanksgiving to you as well, Robin.
And here's music from another film on Steve's list, Woody Allen's Hannah and Her Sisters. On Facebook, Scott Fry suggests The Family Stone. It's about a conservative woman who goes to visit her fiancé's liberal family. Here's more. What's cooking? Guns, pregnancy, gay relationships, racial tensions, and a turkey. What could go wrong? Scent of a Woman, Al Pacino. Remember, that took place over Thanksgiving break. So again, your suggestions and trailers for all of Steve's picks at hereandnow.org.